Welcome back to Putting It Together, the podcast that discusses Stephen Sondheim's entire body of work chronologically, show by show, and song by song. Today, we're going to be talking about a quintet that's really a quartet. But let's not worry about semantics. This song, the Tonight Quintet, or sometimes referred to as Tonight 2 Electric Boogaloo, is one of my favorites of the show, mostly because of the music. This is something that Sondheim loves to do, especially when we get to his later work where he writes both the music and the lyrics, where multiple characters are singing on stage, often with different melodies and all coming to a head in one musical motif. For whatever reason, it has always left me feeling tingly because of how good it is. Something that's truly interesting is that this song was originally supposed to come before last week's song, One Hand, One Heart, which certainly would have made for a different show. I don't bring it up in the episode, but Stephen Sondheim writes in the book Finishing the Hat that there was a big disagreement about the placement of the song with Jerome Robbins, the director and choreographer, who put his foot down with believing that the show would flow better with the quintet coming after. The other collaborators felt that Tony wouldn't agree to the rumble if he had already, quote-unquote, married Maria. However, Jerome Robbins apparently just shut his eyes and shook his head. That was how he argued when he became ultra stubborn. So they tried it both ways, and the other collaborators had to agree that Robbins' way was superior. The piece flowed better, even if the show logic didn't. Well, to help me discuss the quintet, I've invited on Michael Vecchio, one of the hosts of High Level Showdown, which is a political show that is part of the Alberta Podcast Network. I never actually met him in person, but his insights were something that I would love to engage with again. Speaking of which, Putting It Together is part of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. You should check out Michael's show, High Level Showdown. Hosts Michael, Elliot, and Sharon debate political topics from across Canada and the world that relate to Edmonton. Now, don't feel like that's a knock against it. Edmonton is a very real place and not a Brigadoon-like fantasy. You can find it on maps, and some people even like it there. At least that's what I've been told. Definitely check out High Level Showdown. You can find it and all the great shows at albertapodcastnetwork.com. Our other sponsor this week is ATB. ATB supports artists and creatives of all kind, which is why they have the Branch for Arts and Culture. If you're an artist, check out ATB's Branch for Arts and Culture. It's a bank, music venue, and creative space all in one. So ATB can help if maybe you're a budding composer wanting advice on how to save up in order to launch a new musical. It's called Dogs, and it features a bunch of dogs singing about dog things. So just like a bunch of people dressed as dogs singing about dogs. You know, scratch that. Maybe you can think of a better idea. Something like that would never work. So ATB can help. You can go to atb.com/thebranch to find out more. Just in case you don't hang around for the end credits, I want to let you know that I'm putting links to Michael's podcast and social media in the description to this episode. Also, a quick heads up, Michael and I talked over the internet, and the website we were using recorded his portion fine, but I did notice a few instances of crackling while he was speaking. I don't think it's enough to be awful, but you will most likely notice a couple parts where there is crackles while he is talking. We also discussed the new West Side Story movie directed by Steven Spielberg. We recorded this episode way back in July, so there wasn't much information available at the time. So if you're wondering why all of a sudden we don't know anything about anything, I mean, that's par for the course, but also time is an illusion. Some people have already taken advantage of this, but if you have comments, questions, or know of somebody who would make a great guest on this show, you can email puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. That's puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Lastly, a couple of things if this is your first time listening to the show. First is that we use three productions of West Side Story to frame our discussions: the original Broadway cast recording, the movie version, and the Broadway revival from 2009. You can listen to any or all of these on any streaming service that I looked at. Secondly, I am utilizing the essential book that Sondheim wrote called Finishing the Hat. It's part memoir and part lyric deep dive. If you like Sondheim, this is a must get. So let's listen to a snippet from the song, and then we'll go right into my conversation with Michael about the Tonight Quintet from West Side Story. So, Michael Vecchio, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Kyle. It's a real pleasure.
I thought maybe we would just start before jumping into this song here this week, maybe having you introduce yourself and what type of podcast you're already familiar with.
Yes, well, I am one of the co-hosts of the High Level Showdown, which is a politics podcast, which is also part of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB.
And that's a good plug. Thank you.
Yes, of course. You always have to do that, right? so we cover provincial politics. We're based out of Edmonton, Alberta. So we cover provincial politics in Alberta, obviously, federally in Ottawa and internationally. And of course, with the current president of the United States, we have a very special segment called Trump Watch that we do every week, you know, because we have to follow this guy. We can't let him, you know, get away with things. So it's a you know, usually an hour long politics show where myself and my other two hosts, Sharon and Elliot, we just banter and discuss and analyze the current political stories. But besides politics, I'm also a critic and a writer for a website called Before the Cyborgs, and I write reviews and essays, pop culture, film, television, and of course that includes musical theater.
Of course.
Through that love of musical theater, Kyle and I were connected, and so I was graciously invited to talk about the great Stephen Sondheim today.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember your first Sondheim show?
Yeah, it was Sweeney Todd.
Okay. Yeah. Good one to be introduced to, I suppose.
And actually, really, I mean, that was my first. And I've since seen, you know, his all of his work, but that does remain my favorite in terms of everything, the music, the lyrics, perhaps the macabre nature of it all. But that holds a special place in my heart for sure.
It's definitely interesting how varied Sondheim's career goes over time, right? We start with West Side Story and we do some pretty traditional musical theater pieces. And then we start to get into some really weird shows later on into like the middle of his career. One of my favorites too, though. It's really, really good. Is there West Side Story specifically? Did you see a production of it, or were you familiar with the movie or just the music first?
Well, I've seen the movie a number of times, not in a few years, but I have seen it a handful of times. So I'm quite familiar with it. I recently saw a new production in Edmonton at the Citadel Theater, was their final show. It was in the McLeod Theater. So if some of your listeners are familiar with the Citadel Theater, the McLeod Theater in the Citadel is the Thrust Theater, you know, kind of the amphitheater. Yep. So it was an interesting staging, certainly. And so that was actually the first time I saw it on stage, but familiar with the film, of course. And I have read the libretto, I guess. Is that what you would call it?
The book. The book and the musical, I guess, is what you would have read.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
I think I mentioned it on this show before. It's so hard now to remember which show I mentioned this on, but I'm very familiar with the Citadel Theater. I was a part of something called Theater Club when I was in high school in my little small town. And Theater Club was not actually putting on theater. It was actually going and watching theater pieces. So we would drive up to Edmonton and attend mostly Citadel Theater productions.
You know, actually, I was part of a similar thing at my high school in Edmonton. We had a theater club where we saw the productions, I think, on a Tuesday night. And then 2 days later, we had to review it and hand it in to the teacher who was running the club. And it was all at the Citadel, you know, which is one of the great theaters in Western Canada, for sure.
Yeah, it's really great. Two productions that always stand out in my mind is the first time I saw Into the Woods was a production there at the Citadel, which I thought was phenomenal. And there's also a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream that they did. And I always remember it because at one point, Puck takes control of the ground and pulls it over like a blanket. And this blew my teenager mind. Like, how did they do that? I want to know how they made that happen in the theater.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned Sweeney Todd, and I also saw Sweeney Todd at the Citadel. prior to the show, they had sort of a pre-show talk with some of the actors, and that was, you know, really, really interesting to just get into the, and they all mentioned how really brilliant Stephen Sondheim was. And, you know, many people may casually have heard the name and not realize how much of a genius it is, but the actors were really driving home the point that as actors having to work with this script and this music, it really hits home how great this guy is.
Yeah, he definitely, and he mentioned this a lot, where he really likes to write with the actor in mind, or with at least the character in mind, so that it's a little bit easier for them to get into the music. It's not just them sitting or standing there on stage and singing out to the audience. It's like, no, this is, you are wanting something, you're driving towards something, and the language and the music actually all ties together, which is a great way to write your music.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the song that we're going to be going into depth here today is, depending on which recording you have, is sometimes referred to as Tonight 2 or The Quintet. Both are kind of interchangeably used depending on where you're looking it up from. But this is essentially, we have just heard the song One Hand, One Heart, where Tony and Maria have envisioned themselves in the future getting married. And that basically transitions now into five different sections of characters and groups, all kind of looking forward or looking ahead to later on tonight about what they're going to do. So that includes Tony, Maria, Anita, Bernardo, and the Sharks, of course, and then the rest of the Jets. So they're just out there in the streets being like super excited about what they think is going to happen here later tonight. And I just want to call this out, is that this is, I think, a very Sondheim thing to do. Like, this is setting the bedrock, because in many of his other shows, he goes back to this type of structure where there is multiple characters singing at the exact same time, and often maybe even different melodies at the exact same time.
Yes, yes. I think that one of the things I love, and it's interesting because in this case, he didn't write the music, but in his other instances, he writes these really complex melodies, and a lot of these, counterpoint, you know, and you hear, as you said, like all these characters coming together. And here he manages to create that same illusion, but just with the words. Obviously, the score was written by Leonard Bernstein, but that effect is still there. And I think what I really like about this Tonight 2 or the Tonight Quintet is really how, in that instance of, you know, 5-6 minutes, or I don't know how long the song lasts, everybody gets to tell their story, you know?
Right. Yeah. And for me, at least, it's always interesting when this type of song in a Sondheim show shows up, because most of his shows I experience for the first time as a recording first, and not actually on the stage itself, is that these are the songs where I get the most replay value of, because maybe I'll be listening to one person this time, and the next time I'm really focusing on the other person. And just seeing how that all really melds together is really fun to see how he's able to achieve that.
Yeah.
Although I often wonder if there's some people in the audience who are just like, this is just a wall of sound and I don't understand anything that's going on right
well,
now.
Well, I'm sure there are maybe a few lyrics that you may not, you know, get all the little words in there, but you know, for the most part, it's a really harmonious wall of sound, you know.
Yeah, right. Before we jump into the lyrics, I do want to just call out, like we do here each time, the main people who are singing and the people who are singing on each rendition that we're focusing on. So I just want to call out that for Tony, the original Broadway cast was Larry Kurt. In the movie version, even though it's played by Richard Boehmer, it's actually sung by Jimmy Bryant. And in the 2009 revival, it's Matt Cavanaugh who's singing it. For Maria, the original Broadway cast is Carol Lawrence. In the movie version, of course, played by Natalie Wood, but sung by Marnie Nixon. And in the 2009 revival, it's Josefina Scaglione, I think is how you say her name properly.
Right.
Bernardo is, in the original Broadway cast, Ken Leroy. In the movie, played by George Chakiris, and it's also sung by him. And in the 2009 revival, George Akram. And then lastly, Anita, here's the heavy hitters. Original Broadway cast is Cheetah Rivera. In the movie, it's played by Rita Moreno. And in the 2009 revival, it's Karen Olivo.
Yeah. And, you know, I believe that Anita and Bernardo, they won the Academy Awards for their performances in that film.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. And as I always like to mention, Rita Moreno, one of the first people who got an EGOT.
Yes.
which is an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony Award. So she's very multi-talented, of course. So we start off by the Jets singing, and they sing the Jets. Oh, and I should just mention, I've been getting some comments of people listening to some of the episodes here already, and they get disappointed because I don't actually sing the lyrics. But
I can sing a little bit. I'm a musician as well, so I have a little bit of an ear, I think.
Oh, good, good. I can do the Rex Harrison speak sing thing. That's about as close as I'm going to be able to get to this. So the Jets start that the Jets are going to have their day tonight. The Sharks go back. The Sharks are going to have their way tonight. And then the Jets shoot back. The Puerto Ricans grumble, fair fight. But if they start a rumble, we'll rumble them right. So right away, we're back here kind of from the very beginning where these two groups have been circling each other for the entire show at this point, ready to, you know, fight each other. And this is now the boiling point where they're actually going to find out who the toughest kids in town are.
Yeah, no, it's like that unresolvable, because you have to imagine, you know, before the events of this show, how long has this rivalry been going on, right? This is something obviously we can imagine having happened years, not, you know, more than months. Obviously, this is a long-standing generational thing. And, you know, it's a rite of passage that you will join the Jets or the Sharks, respectively, you know, whichever ethnic group you belong to. And so this is that boiling point, right? It's a boiling point of an unknown duration. You know, I mean, when the show starts, they are already feuding. So, you know, we can imagine, you know, the history of this feud or what caused it or why is it so nasty.
And definitely the music behind this is very reminiscent of even how the show began. Like, we have that same type of rhythm that's going on here. I'm always fascinated by word choice, and definitely here, I mean, the song is basically called Tonight as well, but that word is kind of sung over and over and over again. Like, the importance of that word, I don't think, can just be swept under the rug, where it's like, no, tonight is something's going on. Tonight, tonight, tonight.
There is a musical term, I'm sure you've heard, it's called ostinato. You know, and just a recurring beat or melody, you know, like the Jaws theme, bum, 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 bum. The Tonight, as you say, it is the ostinato in lyrics.
That's cool. I want a t-shirt that says ostinato on it now. But so the Sharks continue singing, we're going to hand them a surprise tonight. The Jets say, we're going to cut him down to size tonight. And then the Sharks say, we said, okay, no rumpus, no tricks, but just in case they jump us, we're ready to mix tonight. Now, this is something that we've been mentioning a lot here during this first season, which is this kind of fake vernacular that they chose to use for the two gangs here in this show. And it always, I mean, I love the rhyming that Sondheim is able to do with rumpus and jumpus, but it always sounds a little bit anachronistic to me using rumpus to talk about fighting someone.
Yeah. It's because this was released in 1957, and I forget, when was it set?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a contemporary piece at the time.
Right.
But they knew that you can tell, I mean, we've discussed this before, it's like, you can tell that what they really wanted to do was use, like, actual, you know, four-letter words in some of the songs. They just weren't able to do that. So it's like, they kind of get there.
Well, like a, hey, Officer Kropke, you, right?
Yeah, we know exactly what they're actually saying in that thing. They just aren't able to say it on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a clever, what's the word, a euphemism? It's I guess it's a clever, I mean, as you say, you can see when you look at the lyrics, you can see the cleverness around them. And even if they are, as you say, anachronistic, you know, to come up with a certain rhyme scheme, it's pleasant. It's fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a fun wordplay. We'll get to a moment here in a second how I think the movie does a disservice to some of the lyrics, but we'll get to that point.
Yeah.
So then everyone sings together and it says, we're going to rock it tonight. We're going to jazz it up and have us a ball. They're going to get it tonight. The more they turn it on, the harder they'll fall. And then the Jets say, well, they began it. And then the Sharks say, well, they began it.
Yeah.
And then they all go back to singing, and we're the ones to stop them once and for all tonight. I will point out the one thing about the 2009 revival that I'm a big fan of, which is because they have part of the lyrics sung in Spanish, I like having that interplay between the English and then the French, the English and then the Spanish refrains that happen.
Now that was, I believe that was translated by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Correct. Yeah, that is right.
And I actually, you know, I think there were critics of that. But I actually think that that was a nice touch. You know, if we're talking about adding a sort of realism to the story, you know, right. the Sharks will have spoken English to the Jets, obviously, but amongst themselves, they will speak their native tongue.
Oh, absolutely,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think the touch of Spanish is actually a really nicely done tribute, you know, obviously to the many Hispanic people in the United States. So I think that was a good move. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with obviously the original in the English, but I know that's a sort of artistic license move that I would support.
Yeah, I'm glad that they did it. And I know that at least the rumor is that there is a remake happening of the movie that's going to be directed by Steven Spielberg at some point happening. And I'm kind of hoping that they do that interpretation instead of just redoing the entire original movie again, like using the Spanish a lot more in there, I think would be a really cool way of setting that apart as like a separate thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Spielberg, does he have a history of directing musicals? That'd be interesting.
I can't think of any musical he's. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure no. And I'm a big fan of Steven Spielberg, so I'm hoping he's able to envision it in a great, great way. So then we get into some of the individual people singing songs, and this is where it cuts over to Anita, and she says, "Anita's gonna get her kicks tonight. We'll have our private little mix tonight. He'll walk in hot and tired, so what? Don't matter if he's tired, as long as he's hot tonight." However, little addendum here. This is where they change it in the movie. Apparently that was too risque for the movie in 1961 or whatever it was actually released. So they changed that to, "He'll walk in hot and tired, poor dear. Don't matter if he's tired, as long as he's near." Which, I don't know. I mean, he tried his best there. I just don't think that works as good to the Anita character, at least, to what is actually in the original.
Yeah. It's also interesting because the imagery of, you know, Rita Moreno in that scene, and she's putting on her stocking, right? And she's still in her undergarments.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, they're trying to shield the audience from a lyrical point of view, but she's still seductively, you know,
that's
dressed.
Right, that's right.
So that's interesting. Yeah.
I like this. This is the book that I'm using quite a bit is this one called Finishing the Hat that Stephen Sondheim wrote about like himself and all of his lyrics.
So he changed it, correct?
He did. He was the one who wrote those newer lyrics. Yes.
Okay.
He just says that he did his best to try to be inoffensive, but he says he'd probably think that even Oscar Hammerstein would have winced at those lyrics, which I find kind of funny.
Well, interesting, because was he not a protege of Hammerstein?
He was, yeah. And Hammerstein is known for his like kind of a little bit overtly flowery language, which Sondheim loved Oscar Hammerstein, don't get me wrong. It's just that he could never write in that style.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's definitely a style.
Yeah. So then we segue over into Tony, and this is where the song actually now goes back to the first song that's called Tonight in the Show. It's the same melody. It's basically using the exact same kind of rhyme scheme and stuff like that. So now he's singing, "Tonight, tonight won't be just any night. Tonight there will be no morning star. Tonight, tonight I'll see my love tonight. And for us, stars will stop where they are. Today the minutes seem like hours. The hours go so slowly. And still the sky is light. Oh, moon, grow bright and make this endless day endless night." So there's your poetic language that Sondheim is able to use when he needs to.
Absolutely. Now, again, going back to the film, I believe that verse was split between Tony and Maria.
I believe you're right, actually. I think Tony sings it once, the first one, and then Maria sings the second, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, in the windowsill.
Yeah, yeah.
Hugging the curtains.
Yeah, the movie is a little bit weird in that it actually shuffles certain songs around as well, which we've discussed here in the past, which I kind of understand on a filmic level, where sometimes you have to do certain things like that. But yeah, if you listen to the movie score, you'll notice that songs are out of order from the original Broadway for sure.
Yes, you know, again, you know, you mentioned now this is Bernstein, obviously, because he wrote the music. But it's that's another brilliant example of the recurring theme. The theme, tonight won't be just any night. That's my singing voice.
Great, great.
That melody belongs to Tony and Maria. And right, the right. other melody belongs to the others. So it's interesting how within this whole quintet, that melody is reserved for them. You know, so that means when we hear it without lyrics, we know that that signifies Tony and Maria.
Absolutely, yeah. Very much like their song together.
Yes, yeah. And the lyrics are as you say, I mean, they're poetic, but they're, you know, what I've always loved about Sondheim is, I don't know, there's been poetry that I've read where it seems like it just like you can tell the author has really tried, you know, to make rhyme go or this stanza. But it's I love the simplicity of Sondheim, but that's not saying that it's, you know, that it's simple and easy. It's sophisticated, but he writes it in a really natural way. And it's just, you know, you totally get the feel, the conveyance of the message in those words, but without it being strained in any way. You know, it doesn't seem contrived.
So then we go now over to Riff, who sings to Tony, "I'm counting on you to be there tonight. When Diesel wins it fair and square tonight, the Puerto Rican punk will go down. And when he's hollered uncle, we'll tear up the town tonight." And this is when it actually segues into basically everyone singing at the same time, but different harmonies and different lyrics and stuff like that. So some of the stuff that's basically being brought out here is Maria saying, "Tonight, tonight won't be just any night," which we've heard before. Yeah. And then Riff is saying, "So I can count on you, boy." Tony's saying, "All right." Riff goes back to say, "We're going to have us a ball." Tony, "All right. Womb to tomb." Riff, "Sperm to worm, I'll see you there about 8. And then Tony, "Tonight." And then the Sharks, "We're going to rock it tonight." And then Anita sings, "Tonight." And then it comes back to everyone else here in a second. But let's just talk a little bit first about what everyone is saying there, all kind of in that jumble as everyone kind of merges their songs together.
Yeah.
I love womb to tomb. I've always really liked that phrase a whole lot. Sperm to worm is one that always seems a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard cradle to grave, womb to tomb is a little bit different.
Right.
Sperm to worm. That's what is this? Do we know what the significance of that is?
Well, I can only hazard a guess here, and what I'm assuming it's probably meaning is that from sperm, so from conception to worm, where you're dead and being eaten by worms. I'm guessing that's what it's talking about.
Oh, well, that's a good guess. Yeah, certainly.
That's my interpretation here, at least. Still doesn't make it any less odd, I would say. But
yeah, interesting. Also, you know, I wonder, because Puerto Ricans would be, largely Catholic. I don't know. Catholic views on the conception of life. And I don't know if that has anything.
I think there is a little bit in there. I mean, in the book itself, that this Finishing the Hat that Sondheim wrote, he does mention a couple times where, like, he himself is not really religious at all, and he didn't, like, overtly put any of those allusions in, but I think you can see those actually in there, or at least in the movie version, they're brought back out, where Maria is very much like an analogy to Mary, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, like very virginal, that sort of thing.
And of course, when Anton is, or Tony is killed, you know, and then they raise his body up, you know, as if, you know,
that's right.
Resurrection or something.
It's very much religious imagery and stuff that they're using, that's for sure. So then the Sharks go, "We're going to jazz it tonight. They're going to get it tonight. They began it, and we're the ones to stop them once and for all. The Sharks are going to have their way. The Sharks are going to have their day. We're going to rock it tonight. And actually, at the very same time, Anita is singing, Late tonight, we're going to mix it tonight. Anita's going to have her day. Anita's going to have her day. Bernardo's going to have his way tonight, this very night. We're going to rock it tonight. And again, at the same time as those two, the Jets are singing, They began it. We'll stop them once and for all. The Jets are going to have their day. The Jets are going to have their way. We're going to rock it tonight.
Yeah, see, now this I find, and I've seen this sort of theme before, where you have the two opposing sides. They each think the other is the savage or the bad one. But when it comes down to it, really, what's the difference between them? They're both thugs. They're both murderers, you know? I mean, really, in times of war, the line of, you know, there's barbarity on both sides. You know, is there really a hero and a villain in war? So it's interesting that, you know, the Jets are saying it's their fault and we're going to set things right. We are the saviors. And the Sharks say, well, it's their fault and we're going to set things right and we are the saviors. You know, so there's heroes and villains on both sides, right? But they're all mixed in this bad thing called war or animosity, you know.
And you can kind of see that like a few times throughout the show where the cops show up, where they kind of play nice with one another. And you can kind of visualize like if this was a different time or like if some different things had happened, like they could be actually really good friends. Like there doesn't have to be this animosity between them, but they've kind of already built it up so far that it's kind of impossible to change at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about, you know, outside of the confines of the show, you know, we don't know about the history of this rivalry, but really, what is it about? Because one is Puerto Rican and the others are you know, WASPs. You know, is this just really a racial thing? Right. What is this all about?
Yeah, and it's hard to say. I mean, I think there's a little bit of race tied up into this, but I think it's even more to do with like actual territory and feelings of inadequacy and all that kind of stuff.
Which I think is with the brilliance of this show is that this is a timeless story. You know, this doesn't have to be set in 57 or 61 or whatever. I mean, that's human nature. There's always going to be two groups that are going to fight each other for a petty reason. And, you know, the people that are caught in between. And so that's, you know, the genius of this is it transcends that time. And, you know, bring Sondheim into this, his lyrics, I mean, sure, there's a few references here and there, but I don't think I don't think he dates himself with these lyrics. You know, Tony and Maria's song, "Tonight, Tonight, Tonight Will Be Our Night." I mean, that can happen. You can say those lyrics anytime and it doesn't set you in any period. Love is timeless, right?
Yeah, it's almost a good thing that there's a song in this show called Cool, right? Like if they had gotten Groovy or something like that, it would have, I think, would have classified the show as like old-fashioned. But yes, there's some fanciful or some corny phrases that they use in this show sometimes. But overall, I would say 100% that this is something that could be put on today and feel as of the moment right now than it was back in the 50s. One of the things I just wanted to call out, and this is something that this is a very personal thing that I love when this happens, whether it's a Sondheim show or even another Broadway show, which is you have these two opposing factions, and in this case, actually, four different people singing at the same time, and they all hit the same word at the same time in a few moments, tonight being the big one. But they all hit that same word, so it gives you that power, and then they go back singing their alternate lyrics, and then they come back and hit that same word again. And it just, for me, as a listener, and even as an audience member, it's so dramatically and, I don't know, utterly satisfying for me when something like that happens.
Yeah, you know, I wonder in the creative process, you know, to make sure those things synced up, if the melody was written first or the lyrics, you know, because different lyricists and composer partnerships have different methods. Sometimes they write the song first and then they add the music. Sometimes it's the music first. You know, I wonder, you know, this is the type of song that I could see Bernstein and Sondheim working together. You know, I'll write this one stanza and then see how can we fit that in musically. You know, it's a very carefully constructed song.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't seem like Bernstein showed up with a melody, Sondheim showed up with the lyrics, and they put them together. Well, no, this was carefully constructed.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, and I think that Sondheim mentions the fact that it kind of goes both ways. Sometimes lyrics happen first, sometimes melody happens first. But in this case, in this song, like it has to be fairly like dead on when you have these multiple people singing at the same time. So there had to be a lot of collaboration in this song to make it work. We end the song off here with Maria and Tony and the rest of everyone else singing all the stuff that we've already mentioned. But Maria and Tony specifically are saying, "Tonight there will be no morning star. Tonight, tonight, I'll see my love tonight. And for us, stars will stop where they are. Today, the minutes seem like hours. The hours go so slowly. And still the sky is light. O moon, grow bright and make this endless day, endless night, tonight." Of course, that last tonight, like everyone in the show now is hitting that note and like raising up dramatically to close out the song. So that's where we end the song in this very dramatic fashion, as everyone is rushing off to be like, either like, I'm going to meet my love tonight, or I'm going to get lucky tonight, or like, no, we're going to show him who's boss tonight triumphantly.
Yeah, so everybody has their storyline, right? And so I guess the brilliance of the show is how those separate storylines then converge at the end, you know, and everybody is affected by the chain of events.
Now, traditionally, this song actually ends Act One, which is it's a good act closer for sure. Like, it's very triumphant. It's like, oh, we're going off and seeing what's going to happen here later on tonight. Like, curtain falls, and you know, you're going off to your intermission here at this point. But what I like that they point out here, that Sondheim has pointed out, is that originally it actually ended with One Hand, One Heart, and they didn't actually have this song in the show. And they just felt like this doesn't flow as good as it could. Like, we end with essentially a love song at the, well, it is a love song to end the show with One Hand, One Heart, or the act with One Hand, One Heart. And then we open up Act Two with I Feel Pretty, of course. So right. It's like there needed to be something to make the show flow a little better. We needed to so that everybody is kind of on their way. And so this was a very late addition to the show, which actually somewhat surprises me. They actually were doing this when they were doing like out-of-town rehearsals. They finally put it into the show, and everyone kind of realized, like, yeah, okay, we need this so that the show doesn't feel disjointed when we come back to Act Two.
Right. So, you know, that being said, that was this song in a way rushed in its creation, and yet look how it turned out. Uh-huh. It's utterly brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's something to be said when you have a deadline, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, you have to make something that's going to work here. Very famously, we'll eventually get to this song, but Sondheim's probably most famous song, Send in the Clowns, was also same thing, added very late into that production, because it's like, we need something that would work, and then he knocks that out.
Yeah, and you know, there's something to be said about the chorus song. Not just in Sondheim works, but, you know, across Broadway, they have a way of rousing the audience. You know, I think of Les Miserables, and they have One Day More. Right. And that's just a great song that has all of them in there. And it ends the first act, I believe. Another example of a Sondheim chorus song is, you know, to begin the show in Sweeney Todd, you know, the Ballad of Sweeney Todd.
Right.
And everybody is in there.
No, that's true.
So, yeah.
I just always like to point this song out as an example, or even some of the ones that we've already heard. Like, one of the biggest detractions or criticisms that Sondheim got early in his career, which he really, really hated and actually writes about in some of his later songs, is the fact that there's no hummable songs. These aren't songs that you like leave the auditorium like humming a tune to.
Oh boy.
It's like, I don't get that criticism of West Side Story, because very clearly there is very melodic lines going on in this show. And this is an example of it, where we have like that Tonight song, that refrain that goes out is very melodic and very hummable, if we want to use that term.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I want to live in America. Ba, 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 ba. I mean, everybody knows that, right?
Yeah.
Or I Feel Pretty,
exactly.
Oh, So Pretty.
No.
I mean, that is a curious.
So people don't know what they're talking about.
Well, yeah. But that's a curious observation. I mean, certainly not West Side Story. I don't know how you could walk out of a show or a viewing of that and not, you know, have at least one of the songs on your tongue.
So I don't know how familiar you are with each of the scores that we were discussing here for this show, which is the original Broadway, the movie version, and the 2009 revival. But do you have a favorite of those three at all? Or is there ones that, like, you would prefer to go back to?
Well, I've seen the film the most times. So that's probably, in my mind, the standard. Mm-hmm. And I did listen to the original Broadway recording for this show. And, you know, honestly, I didn't feel there was that much of a difference between that and the film.
Yeah, I think there's other songs that are very different between the original Broadway and the movie version. This is one of them that I feel is pretty similar.
Yeah. But overall, I would say, I mean, the movie version, you know, obviously the original always has to be the best, because that's the original. I mean, that's the creation. But I feel the movie version is certainly very close and accurate to that, and it's the one that I've seen the most. And I feel, you know, I think that people are aware of that one the most, you know, if it's a film that they've seen.
Yeah, I still go back probably the most to the original Broadway cast. And to sound like a broken record, though, I would say that the 2009 revival has better singers in it, for sure. More crystal clear notes, let's put it that way. But I tend to find myself going back to the original Broadway cast if I'm
absolutely. To West Side Story. But you know, that's not to say that the 2009 doesn't have good goodies in there. And obviously, we discussed the Spanish translation, which I personally, as I've said, I think is a nice addition.
So, Michael, thank you so much for joining me here today. Hopefully you had some fun talking about Sondheim in depth.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for asking me. I'm thrilled. Thank you.
You're welcome. The last thing I'll just ask you here is, if people did want to find more of your stuff online, is there an easy way to do so?
Okay, so I'm on Twitter, and at Maestro Michael 2. It's my Twitter handle, and the site that I am a writer for is called beforethecyborgs.com, and you can read my material there and, you know, follow me on Twitter and such. And I certainly love film, television. You know, television, I guess I would put in another category, but I really love film and theater. Very, very much. And I certainly have enjoyed being able to write on these topics and, you know, to be asked on platforms such as your show to discuss it. Because I think, you know, these shows, they've really enriched our lives. And so it's right that we should appreciate them. And Sondheim is definitely one of those great figures that I've loved for a very long time. And for good reason, obviously, as you know very well, he is a great master.
Well, whenever we get to Sweeney Todd, I'll call you up again and we can have a discussion there.
Oh, yes. Actually, I would say, you know, that is the one I know the most on is Sweeney Todd. I've seen Broadway. I've seen, obviously, the Tim Burton film and a few other adaptations that I have, you know, there's been a few film versions of it other than Tim Burton, which have been very interesting. So to see the evolution of Sweeney Todd and what Stephen Sondheim did with it is a worthy discussion as well.
For sure. All right, perfect. Thank you again, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Like I mentioned at the beginning, I've left a few links to see Michael's stuff in the description of this episode. Please email the show if you have feedback at puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a review in whichever app or store you get your podcast from. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, plus pretty much anywhere else you can download podcasts from. Thanks to the Alberta Podcast Network and to ATB for sponsoring us this week. Also, a big thanks to the always great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. We'll be back again next week, but for now, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.